We never hear any stories about people that start in the middle and go straight down, okay? And I went straight down and then down and then down.
I'd like to believe that I could look in the mirror and tell myself I'm great and then I'd feel it. But if you're destroying yourself the other 23 hours and 56 minutes, the self-talk isn't gonna matter. Rich people do not value money the way poor people do. I think a lot of us, if we grew up poor, we believe it takes money to make money. Our parents told us that. Maybe a grandparent or the neighbor or somebody said that to us because that was their, how they justified not having their breakthrough and getting trapped. They're like, oh, the reason I didn't get out. And we know everybody's got an excuse in their lifetime. Everybody uses them at some point in their lifetime to trap themselves. This idea that it's not true, it's a myth.
What do all these successful people have in common? You know, whether it was the mattress dealer, the car dealer, the furniture dealer, or Elon Musk, they spend money, man. You know, they spend money. They spend a lot of money. And they don't worry about money the way I was worried about it. They used money, you know. They used it. They didn't save it. They didn't hoard money. Mm-hmm. And the greatest companies on this planet today, the ones that have just like, some of these companies have lost money for 25 years. Look at Amazon.
Yeah.
Reinvest. 1.7 million employees. When I started, I remember I looked at Ernst Young. I said, I have a buddy that worked at Ernst Young. I said, how many employees you got? He's like, 240,000.
Wow.
And I'm worried about 10 people.
Mm-hmm.
What am I thinking?
Mm.
So when I quit studying individuals and started studying people, everything shifted for me. What is this big company doing?
Mm-hmm.
Because that also relieved me of being competitive with this guy, Pete, and started saying, okay, I'm going to go do what Coca-Cola does. That's when I bought the plane.
Right. Really?
Yeah.
How old were you when you bought the plane?
I was 50, maybe 55, the first one. I bought it because I studied what Coca-Cola was doing. They bought planes. I said, why are they buying planes? Oh, then I learned how they write them off. And then I learned how they trade them every 3 years.
That's crazy.
So notice every 3 years, I'm trading a plane. I'm getting rid of it, replacing it with another one. But what are they using it for? They don't use it for pleasure. They're not using it for Instagram photos.
Right.
They're using it to go and set up headquarters in other countries.
Wow.
You know, so that's when I wrote, if you're not first, you're last, because when I started studying these companies, I'm like, Coca-Cola's everywhere. You can't go anyplace and not see Coca-Cola. I was like this big. I was always thinking about what can I keep?
Mm-hmm.
And they were thinking about how many shells can we get on? How many eyeballs can we see?
Mm-hmm.
So that's when it all clicked for me.
Rich is not just synonymous with money. Rich is synonymous with living. You know, when I think of money, all money really is energy. And it's ideally, it's energy and movement. And we don't circulate money particularly well in this world or in this country. It gets accumulated. And when things get accumulated, energy stops moving. So one way that we can begin to move money, as an example, is to have it become more meaningful to move it.
If you hoard your money, a few things happen. You get sick,
really?
And then you have to pay for the medical bills.
Really?
Yeah. Or like your kids do something bad and then you have to pay for the damage. So money needs outlet. So it's so interesting how money flows. And if you don't let out money energy's outlet, it's going to get bad. It's like a pond.
Mm-hmm.
If there's no flow, the water gets bad. And then the next flow comes in. So here comes money EQ, the trust part. Trust is the hardest part of money EQ. You have to have the trust that once you let go of money, it comes back. So you don't have the trust. That's why you start worrying. That's why you have doubts about yourself.
Life is about an expression of spirit. Life is an expression of itself. And it gets constrained by story. How can I be more artfully expressing who I am fully in a joyous way and accepting life as it comes to me without precondition? That gives me an opportunity to move beyond my story, and it also gives me an opportunity to really identify where my story is constraining me.
You have to find your place, your seat, your reserved seat is what I call. A lot of people try to sit on other people's seat, which is wrong because your seat is reserved somewhere else. And if you don't see it on other people's seat, what happens is that you get so depressed. And then you feel so meaningless, you know, so and all that, because you cannot really feel life. But once you sit on your seat, you are so deeply connected with your life purpose, then you start, your magnetism starts, gets turned on.
For most people, what they do is exterior driven. It's driven by what we think others think we should have. It's not what we think we should have. And having a new iPhone, having a new watch, having an increased bank account may give me peripheral satisfaction, but deep emotional meaning is usually not going to be there. We have a poverty of meaning, particularly in the Western world, that is driven by rampant consumerism, thinking that we're going to replace this hole. And if people can stop and think about what's meaningful to them, you know, why am I alive? What can I be doing that will bring inherent meaning to who I am and why I'm here? That makes a big difference.
The first thing I would teach is money is fun.
Mm.
So if your kids know that money is fun, so we used to sit on the dinner table, just say, I have this, say, $10,000 to donate. What do you want to do? You can, help rescue the animals. You can help the environment. You can help the homeless people. What do you want to do? And when we give presents, what would you want to do? So my daughter grew up thinking money can do so many wonders. So if all our kids learned money is a magical wand to make people happy, I think people are more excited about getting the money. So they have no negative ideas about money. Imagine what if all the child have never been scolded for wasting their money. I think we'll be so stress-free. Because a lot of worries come from the need for survival, and it's attached to money.
Right.
So once we are free of money stress, I think our life will be so different.
Yes.
Yeah. So if you can teach money is a fun thing, that is a great starter.
Okay. Number one, teach them money is fun.
Right. And also, even though your child is growing up with a positive attitudes, your friends may not. So they're trying to compete with you of how much they have allowances, or like, this is my new iPhone something,
yes.
Or like, this is my sneakers, yeah. Or whatever that is. And then people try to manipulate you with emotions. So if you start teaching, you feel bad about money, you feel ashamed of money, you feel guilty about around money, we all feel some emotions.
Yes.
So if you start teaching emotions about around money, I think your kids will be emotionally free.
One way I frame it is this next 30 years will dictate the next 300 years.
What do you own that is unique? What do you have that's uniquely yours? What data do you have? What processes do you have? What assets do you have? That as the tech changes, you can take that data and those assets and put it through the new tech.
Every single person needs to be trained in AI and using these chatbot, auto GPT tools, and absolutely augment themselves 10, 20, 100x.
I view what's going on in the business world today similar to the asteroid, 20-kilometer asteroid that struck the Earth 65 million years ago and wiped out the dinosaurs, right? The asteroid changed the environment of Earth so rapidly, so dramatically, that the slow, lumbering dinosaurs who didn't adapt went extinct. And it was the furry little mammals, our ancestors, that were agile enough to adapt that survived and thrived. So the asteroids striking Earth right now are exponential technologies with AI as the, the overlord there. And it's just going to change the environment so rapidly that you need agility. You need a team that is agile. When you digitize any product or service, and every single product and service is or will be digitized. And if you're a CEO running a company where your services are not digitized, you're in trouble because someone else is going to do it to you.
Yeah, if you look back in history, maybe 50, 70 years ago, it needed about a 10,000-person company to create $1 billion valuation.
That's crazy. Right?
Then it dropped to about 1,000 people. Instagram was 13 people. right? Now we'll get it down to three people, because AI will handle most of the execution work. Mm-hmm. You'll have a CEO who will drive vision and product, a product guy who will focus just on getting things done, and an operations person that will handle everything else. And you should just have AI bots doing all the finances, marketing, et cetera, et cetera.
So one of the things I'm doing in the companies that I'm running or advising or investing in is I'm saying, first of all, every company needs to have what I call a chief AI officer. And it's a role I made up, was teaching at Abundance 360 this year, and it is not someone who's building a large language model for you or writing code for you. It's an individual who understands what's going on in the terrain, because we're seeing not hundreds or thousands, tens of thousands of startups. Everybody, you know, you can start an AI company now with literally spare time in your garage. So understanding what's out there, what the modalities are, and what you can and should be using is critical. So your chief AI officer is scanning the horizon, understanding it, and then advising members of your team. So every part of your team, right? There's going to be AI supporting sales and marketing and engineering and HR. We're all going to have, in the near term, an AI co-pilot, right? This is an AI that helps you do your job better, because we are so limited as carbon life forms. But ultimately is going to be able to operate and do a number of the things repetitively, because we do a lot of repetitive tasks and AIs are much better at that.
If you have an email newsletter that goes out, use ChatGPT to say, how would I increase the engagement rate with this email? We did that. We got a 25% increase
open
rate.
Can you feed it the email?
You feed it the email.
Yeah. And you say, how do I make this better?
Yeah. Come up with a better headline.
Or put in social sharing links throughout it. Or say, listen, I'm in HR. Go to ChatGPT. Open it up right now. Hopefully you have the GPT-4 version of it. And say, I'm in HR. How should I be using generative AI in my business? It'll feed you, you know, give me 5 examples or 10 examples. Pick the one that sounds good. Give me step-by-step instructions on how to use this. It's recursive in that fashion. And so you're going to use AI to help you learn what you want to know. You know, it comes back a lot to mindset, Tom, and you need the mindset of a kid here. Mm-hmm. Curiosity, absolute play. It's like, you know, one of the things I'm going to be doing in my team, my PhD Ventures that runs Abundance 360 and a few others, we're setting aside 3 days and no homework coming out of these 3 days. We're going to go in with a series of objectives and we're going to actually crank for 3 days and generate all the content, all the plans. And you can, but it takes time for all of us to switch from our old habits of how we do things to new ways. So the first time it's going to take 150% of your time. The next time we'll take 50%, then 25%.
Is this the business I'm going to start? With 20 hours of focused effort, most people can be pretty decent at something, whether it's guitar, it's singing, even cold calling. If you actually cold call for 20 hours, focused effort, you'd be decent. But most people spend years waiting to do the first hour. And so I like thinking about things in terms of directionally correct rather than will I hit it or not? It's because it's easy psychologically for us to say yes, no, honest, dishonest, etc. But it makes making decisions really hard, because you're like, is this the path for me? Whereas like, well, if I started something, I would be more likely to be successful than if I did not start anything. And from there, I will gain experience and perspective to then make the next iteration on the main thing. And most people had a graveyard of failures before they had their actual first success. What amount of action would it be unreasonable for me not to be successful? And so for me, it's like, I believe that if you do 10,000 cold calls, you'll get better. Like, it would be unreasonable for you not to be good. Like, after that level of effort, if you take half your paycheck every month or a third of your paycheck every month and you say, I'm going to advertising university, which is I'm going to spend money actually advertising, trying to get people to click on this thing and give me their name and phone number. If you go and you spend that amount of money on actually advertising, after a year, after 2 years, you'll probably be pretty good. Especially if you join a community of other people who are doing the same thing, right? You seek out mentors who are doing, who have done and can give you frameworks that you can just work off so you can shortcut your path to success. It becomes unreasonable that you wouldn't be more successful in the future than you are today. Just embrace the suck. And so it's like, how can I normalize no's? So it's like, if I'm teaching somebody to sell, it's like, dude, I need you to get 100 no's. And the thing is all of a sudden, if the no becomes the goal, then they realize that it's about the process and not the outcome, and then they will become better salespeople because they stop being afraid of it. The same thing, like, for training a salesperson, I want them to hear the gasp, right? Which is like, you say a price, every phone. Everyone's afraid of saying the price. And it's like, dude, if you didn't get a gasp, you didn't go high enough.
Right.
And they're like, what? I'm like, oh, you failed. Terrible sale. They didn't gasp. They're like, really? And so then it flips it and becomes a point of pride. It's like, oh, I got it. You should hear the gasp on this one. And so all of a sudden they stop being afraid. We normalize, we do like exposure therapy and things that people are most afraid of. And I hope that with all the stuff that we do, that we can do that in a micro way for at least a handful of people. So they just start doing and realize that they're going to gain perspective, and the light of their knowledge will give them the next foot. But the thing is, they're stuck on the first one trying to pick the first path when they have no idea. They should focus on one thing in general, rather than lots of different things that you're not sure about. Because if you're starting out, everything looks like an opportunity. So the correct answer is all of them are opportunities, but all of them won't work unless you pick one, right? So you have to say no to all the other mistresses. So boom, you pick one. And then from there, I always say six figures is sell something to someone. That's it. And if you want more detail, sell something to someone. So it's one avatar, one product, one channel. So you don't have to figure out, how do I create 20 pieces of content across? It's like, just pick one channel, one media source, whether it's Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, you know, whatever, Twitter. Consistently start going on that, whether that's cold outbound, whether that's content, whether it's running paid ads, whether it's affiliates, word of mouth, whatever it is. And start reaching out to people there to start selling your stuff. You have to learn how to advertise, which I define as the process of making known. So how do you let other people know about the stuff you sell? And then once people engage with whatever advertisement you have to sell them. So advertising is the first skill, selling them is the second skill. And then product would be the third skill, which is the thing that you're ultimately advertising and selling. So usually once people do it in the beginning, they're sporadic, they're not consistent with it. Just the act of doing the same thing every day usually gets people to 100,000 a month, which sounds crazy to probably people listening, but most people who think that's crazy also haven't done it consistently for an extended period of time. Mm. And so I use something that I call the rule 100, which is 100 primary actions, whether it's 100 minutes of content creation per day, 100 reach outs per day, $100 of ad spend per day. Like, you have to pick one of them, but 100 per day, and you do that for 100 days, and I promise you, you'll be making six figures. Also, I feel like two parts of the audience that like follow my stuff. I've got the business owners who are trying to scale a business, etc., and then I've got all the people who want to start a business, and usually they're a little bit younger and whatnot. And I think there's a misnomer around like education. And so a lot of them, I don't know how explicit I can be, but like they mentally masturbate to watching lots and lots of videos. They, you know, want the pump up speeches. They buy the tickets to the things. Mm-hmm. And I think that they think that exposure to information is learning. And I don't think that's true, or at least it hasn't been for me.
That's definitely not true.
And so when I do the original rule of 100 and whatnot, it's because I think it's the most effective way to learn, which is you force yourself on the one controllable that you have, which is the activities that you can take. And then it goes with the underlying assumption that you go off feedback and you're like, well, that opening message did not work, right? And then I think most people have a dramatic underestimation of how much volume it takes to be successful. You get the skill from the volume, the feedback from the volume. And there's all these like little things. I'm sure it's like from the exercise world because you come from that. Like when you squat, the first time you squat, you're orienting yourself to your environment. You're barely actually squatting. You're just looking like you have a bar on your back. But you learn so much between that first rep and your 10,000th rep of squats. And so I think for most people, it's like, if I can just decrease the action threshold for people to begin and be okay with the fact that they're going to suck, and it is okay to suck. You should expect to suck. And it would be unreasonable for you to be good if you haven't done it before.
Prove them right! Because there's an end to your life, and it's coming sooner than you think. It goes by like this. Just yesterday, Max was 6 years old at the car wash. He's going off to college next year. Just yesterday, she was 8 months old. Now she's got a boyfriend. Just yesterday, I was a young, cool guy. Just yesterday, me and my girlfriend were walking on the beach. Someday, I'm going to do that. It goes by in a flicker, and at some point, it's going to be over. To me, heaven when we die is we meet that person we were capable of being, destined to be, and we're identical twins. Hell is you meet them and you're total strangers. My obsession in my life is when I meet that dude, we're gonna be identical twins. He's gonna meet me and go, hey man, proud of you. Been watching you this whole time. Man, you did it. You got off track there for a while. It took you a little while. You're a late starter, but man, you did it. I don't do things based on how I feel. I do things based on who I am. And who I am is that guy. And every decision, that action, does it move me closer to being that man? Does it move you closer to being that woman? That's the barometer of how you live your life. Who are you when nobody's watching? What's the real difference you make in the world? Who are you really as a man or a woman? Who are you really? I get a lot of credit. I don't hold a candle to that guy. Who are you really? In quiet moments when human beings need you, are you that person they can rely on? Are you that person who steps up? Are you that person who makes a difference for them? Because you can win in big ways, mansions, jets. I know all about that stuff. It's awesome. I want you to have them. But I'll submit to you, it's the small things you do that no one will ever probably know you did that'll be the things that'll make you the most proud of you, that will ultimately be the definition of who you are as a man or a woman. It's who you are in those moments. But there's a destiny you're supposed to fulfill. There's people you're supposed to help. There's a difference you're supposed to make. Your life, your way, special to you, not mine, not jets, not houses, not cars, your precious life, your beautiful life, your soul, your gifts, your difference. I want you to win.
I've always tried to disqualify myself. It always shocks people, even people that know me really well. They're like, not you. I don't know that I'm too talented, but I think I can fake it pretty well. I disqualify myself because, you know, the truth is that maybe for a while, everything that I got that was love when I was a child only came when I achieved something. So I started to conflate early on in my life recognition and significance with love. In other words, my dad would love me if I hit the home run. My dad would love me if I get straight A's. And so then when I would feel these things, and also like, I love to beat myself up with mistakes I've made. I did this, I did that, I should have done this, I didn't do that. And I've always thought these mistakes, these weaknesses of mine, disqualify me from being happy or helping people. And this amazing breakthrough, the one decision that changed my family forever is my dad's decision to get sober. And it changed my family forever. I'm talking to you because my dad made that decision. Wow. And I've always been so proud of my dad for that. But this is just 2 weeks ago, 3:15 in the morning. I wake up, I'm crying. And I wake Christiana up, I go, babe, someone helped dad. And she went, what, honey? I said, someone helped dad. She goes, what do you mean? I said, babe, I never thought about this. In my dad's darkest, worst moment of his life, in some coffee shop or some room somewhere, some precious soul helped my dad. And I said, babe, that's not the powerful part. And I have no idea who this person is, but I wonder if they know the difference they made in Max and Bella's, my children's lives, or your life, wow, or the millions of people I've helped, that one decision they made. And she goes, oh my gosh. I said, I never thought about this beautiful human being. I always gave the credit to my dad, but some stranger helped him. And I said, babe, do you know what qualified them to help my dad? Their messed up life.
Wow.
They were an alcoholic. They were a drug addict. Little did that person know the things they were the most ashamed of, the biggest mistakes of their lives, when they were using drugs and drinking and stealing, that was qualifying them to change my dad's life. And all of us, we run around carrying these bags of, I'm not qualified because I made this mistake. I had this bankruptcy. This relationship didn't work. I did this thing you don't know about. I'm so ashamed of.
That's why you're qualified.
That's the thing that qualifies you.
Yeah.
The humanness in you. You are the only human being with your combination of gifts that you were given, whatever they are, and your experience. Mm-hmm. And real human beings help real human beings by being vulnerable and transparent, saying, I know where you are. I've messed up worse.
Right.
I've made greater mistakes. I felt more. I know that depression. I know that anxiety. I know that shame. I know what that feels like. They didn't know all those mistakes they're making were leading them out of their heart. And they finally got to a point where their intention was to help my father.
Mm-hmm.
In the lowest moment of his life, they changed my dad's life, and they're changed mine, and maybe me and you are changing a few today because of that person's mess. My dad had these couple theories he would always say to me, and so one was when he got sober, he gave it one more try. He was gonna stay sober one day at a time. My jet was in almost walking distance of my dad's house. He's never been on any of them.
Wow.
And I would say to my dad, I would say, hey, let's go play golf in Maui. Let's go. There's these great golf courses in the ocean. And my dad would say, well, why would I go all the way to Maui to play golf with my favorite person, my son, when we can play here in Chino? It's not about there. I want to be with my son. So this, my family had none of that stuff. But my dad knew I was a dreamer. And my dad would always say, you know, I was one decision away from changing my life the whole time. One choice. And he'd say, Eddie, you're not as far away from these dreams as you think you are. And I'd say, really, Dad? And he'd go, no, you're actually a lot closer than you think. But because you think it's so far away, you behave in accordance with that belief system, and it always keeps it that far away from you.
For some of you, it's really for all of you. But the ones in this room that are smart enough, hungry enough, determined enough, with the right mindset and the right mentality, will see this opportunity and you will grab it. Is everybody with me? Successful people are flexible. Successful people can pivot. When something's not working, pivot. That's what successful people do. They pivot, they change, they're flexible. If something's not working, they don't keep doing the same old, because it's not working. Does that make sense? And grown men and grown women think a certain way, operate a certain way, and have a certain mindset and mentality. I want you to understand you are a part of a legacy. You've heard about your mom's story, you heard about your dad's story. Now it's time for you to build your story. You're saying to yourself, you know what, I got a GED, nobody wants me. I used to be an alcoholic, nobody wants me. My own father used to tell me I was no good, nobody wants me. I'll just work this little dead-end job and we'll figure out what's next, because I don't have anywhere to go. Some of you guys can relate to what I'm saying. Somehow, some way, you've disqualified yourself. I work with so many people and I can relate to it. Nobody can beat you but you. Nobody can stop you but you. But the worst thing you can do is disqualify yourself. Don't ever confuse your potential with who you are at the time. Many of you guys, your mom made sacrifices for you. Your dad made sacrifices for you. Now it's time for you to grab the bull by the horns and impact your legacy. Is everybody with me? Your mom and dad have this story. Your grandfather, your grandmother has his and her story. Now you are building your story. It can happen to you, it can happen for you, but you gotta write these goals down, plain up on tablets, so they can be seen by men, and that man and that woman is you. Some of you guys have an opportunity to be special. Some of you guys have an opportunity one day maybe to have your own store. Oh, don't look at me like that. Maybe you can have your own store. You're a manager right now. Maybe one day you could be a franchisee. I dreamt about the NBA and it happened. I wanted to be a Hall of Fame motivational speaker. And it happened. But I wrote my visions plain up on tablets. And every day that I looked at them, I was focused. Believe more, want more. Just be flexible, believe more, do more, want more. You're more excited about Facebook and Instagram and power. Oh, I can't miss power. Oh, empire, I can't miss empire. But some of you guys, it's golf. You know, I go to work, but man, I can't wait to hit that golf course. My father taught me something very valuable. But you know what? You will dwell in what you dwell on. You will dwell in what you dwell on. If you dwell on marijuana, you will dwell in marijuana. And you will get the weed smoker's reward. I thought about it the other day. I'm from Chicago. I've never been to a thug retirement party. Have you? I've never been to a thug retirement party. I guess I have. They're called funerals. What you dwell in, you dwell on. So can I give you a little bit of advice? Make sure your value system is good. Make sure your value system makes sense. Some of you guys may be taking college courses. If you're in school, raise your hand. Can I ask you guys a question? Everybody in this room is pretty much legally grown. Am I right or wrong? Is there any excuse for an adult not to get A's? Is there? I mean, I was silly in middle school, were you? I was immature in high school, were you? I was an alcoholic in college. Maybe you were too. I was at every party with my red solo cup. But now I'm 50 years old. I got a wife. I got kids. I got mortgages. I got bills. School is over. That's all about the real deal right now. You guys with me? Is there any excuse for an adult not to get an A out of life? So when you go to work, is there any excuse for you not to be an A manager? Is there any excuse for your store not to be an A store? Is there any excuse for you to go home and not be an A husband? Is there any excuse for you not to be an A wife or a mom or a dad? Is there any excuse? Because we're not in middle school anymore. We're not in high school anymore. See, in life, what I've learned, to be successful, we have to pivot.